Good to see you back as well, Jalen. Have you ever been stuck? Found yourself in a situation that you wanted to get out of but couldn't? I don't mean perhaps literally physically, but I'm sure perhaps you've had that as well. Your dreams, yeah. Yep. And then you feel a great sense of relief that you're not stuck in real life like you are in your dream. Yeah. Three images came to mind as I was thinking about this, and this is, of course, hopefully going to relate to what I'm going to say as far as chapter 14 in John, but stuck like a bumblebee. Have you ever seen a bumblebee that's just beating its head against a window, and yet just a few centimetres that way, there's an open window? And you're thinking, just move. This is senseless, bumblebee. Move across, and you'll be able to get out. Obviously, an insect in a spider's web, that's almost the dream image, isn't it? You're trapped, and it's not the trapped that's the worst part. It's knowing there's worse to come when the spider decides it's time for dinner. There's that stuck as well, where you just, and the more you struggle, the worse it gets. You get more entangled in the web. Or then there's the image of the monkey that sees a jar full of nuts, thrusts his hand in there, grabs a whole handful, and then can't get his hand out because the fist is too big for the opening of the jar, and he's stuck. Or she. Three images that came to my mind that are different but have this element of stuckness to them. You know that they're not making any progress until they change something. Now, Israel has for hundreds of years, longer, been stuck when Jesus arrives. They're stuck. They're in the promised land, but they're not free in the promised land. Cedric mentioned this long history of Israel, starting in a sense with, it goes before Egypt, of course, when God calls Abraham, this Abraham and Sarah to be the parents of a great nation, and go to a land and I will show you. But they end up in Egypt, and the numbers of Israelites blossom until the Egyptians have a problem, and then begin to oppress them, and then God says, no, I see this and I don't like it, so I want to get my people out of here. And we have this wonderful story of the Exodus, which has so captured the imagination of Israel. The story of God's incredible rescue from the situation of slavery under Pharaoh. And this journey through the desert, where God, even though that generation was particularly stiff-necked that they end up not getting into the promised land, nevertheless, God preserves them and sustains them. Their clothes do not wear out. They are fed the whole way. 40 years wearing the same clothes. Now, would that not make you feel stuck? Who would want to wear the same clothes for 40 years? You make your wife feel stuck? Absolutely. I love the fact that clothes wear out. You can get new ones. The same food. They must have felt trapped. And then, of course, they all die in the desert. And the next generation of Israelites forge into the promised land, tossing out all the enemies. Well, not all of them, unfortunately. Some stay stuck. But they occupy the land and they begin to build this nation. And we have this wonderful story of King David, who's this great king with rather large flaws. Nevertheless, he builds a nation, and Solomon, his son, extends the nation. And then it all has this monumental collapse, and it turns into two nations. And then God says, you're stuck. So I'm going to send an enemy who will break you apart, and they will take you away from your promised land into exile. And then they're stuck in exile, and they're there for 70 years. God promised, and after 70 years, I will free you, and I will take you back to the land I promised to you. And they come back into the land, but they rebuild the temple, but it's not their own nation. from that point on, from the point of Babylon's overtake, they are not a sovereign nation in their own right. They don't have a king. They don't get to set the laws of their land. They have to live under someone else's oversight. And of course, when Jesus arrives, it's Rome. And they're stuck. And they're still yearning, though, for a breakthrough. They are still praying for this much prophesied Messiah who will come to be God's king and deal with this stuckness and restore them. They are so waiting for the promise of the promised land to be fully realized for them. And Jesus has come with that weight of expectation, as well as that actual mission to shift Israel from their stuckness into freedom. You probably remember the great passage in Luke when he's in his hometown of Nazareth. He's given a scroll to read. It's from Isaiah. He finds this particular passage. It's not like he was handed this passage. He went looking for it and he said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me to proclaim freedom for the slaves, to set you free, to declare the year of Jubilee when all debts are paid." That's what the year of Jubilee was about. All debts are paid. All that was meant to be yours as an inheritance will go back to you. No matter what you've lost, it'll all be restored. I mean, the year of Jubilee, I don't think, was ever honored, and it is the most extraordinary idea. And I cannot imagine it ever being honored, could you? People who have accumulated wealth and land having to give it back to other people just because it was their inheritance. I could never imagine that happening. I don't think it was ever honored. "And I will give sight to the blind and strength to the lame." That was his mission as he understood it. And then he offended them all by saying, "This prophecy has been fulfilled today in your sight." And they rejoiced, right? No, they tried to kill him. I mean, here's a guy saying, "I'm about to do what you've been waiting for." And instead of rejoicing, they try and kill him. Now, there's reasons for that. You should read the passage. He does rile them. Essentially, he says, well, in history, when God moved, he didn't move in Israel, he moved with these pagans. That's what got them upset. And Jesus has not found an overwhelmingly positive response among the leaders of Israel in John either. They too hate him. And in John 14, he is walking slowly but steadily toward the cross. We read 2 weeks ago, John 13, when they are sitting together, him and his disciples, around this Passover meal, the one that the communion takes its heart from. And so that he's just hours away now from his trial, his arrest, his trial, his execution. And he's trying to impart something now to his beloved 12. He's only down to 11 at the moment because Judas has already left. He left in the previous chapter. And he's left with his 11. And he says these words, "Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. And you know the way to where I am going." Notice the language that Jesus uses here. "I am going to prepare a place for you. Don't be troubled. I'm going to somewhere which will be your home, and I'll come and get you, and we'll live together." This reminds me of the story of Joshua, where the Lord said to Joshua, Be strong and courageous. Don't let your heart be troubled. I am with you, Joshua. Now go and get the land for these people. It's the same essential message, but said differently, because there's something different about his promises here. There's something different about this land. Jesus is not heading off to New Zealand to prepare a new place for them because this one got a little too hot politically, so let's move. It's not what he's thinking. But his language is so similar. It rings so much like they would hope to hear from Jesus as these disciples who are still committed to him, still thinking, though, any minute now he's going to say, right, guys, we've come so far, sharpen your swords. You are my captains. We're going to build up the army of Israel and we're going to take Rome. He doesn't, though. And yet there's enough in this for them to think, ooh, here we go, here we go. Unfortunately, Thomas isn't sure. Lord, we do not know where you are going. How can we know the way? What's his question? What's his concern? Aren't we already in Jerusalem? Where are you going? Like, this is the place, isn't it? Like, the temple's just down the road. Aren't you supposed to reform that and get our religion back? And there's a palace and a throne. Where are you going? Why are you leaving? He's still thinking, where's the River Jordan that I get to cross? This desert that I'm supposed to have had to walk through. Aren't we supposed to take this city? Look, I don't know what you're talking about. I thought I did. And then you said you're going to go to a place. I assume that's not here. Thomas is stuck, isn't he? He's stuck still thinking what he and his people have believed and expected and longed and looked for hundreds of years. And you don't shift those kinds of expectations with just a couple of comments. Israel is still stuck trying to fight for a piece of land. And it will fight as long as it's stuck thinking that's still what is required. Jesus said to him, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. So here's a question. If citizenship in Israel is considered a good thing, what might be better? If citizenship in New Zealand is a good thing, what might be better? Citizenship in the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven. However, we've got those languages, those words, those phrases from the other gospels. John doesn't use those, but what he does say over and over again is, I and the Father are one. And where is the Father? He is overruling all things from a much higher plane. I have come from there, and I'm going back there. Guess where I'm going? Guess what I'm preparing for you? Don't worry about crossing the River Jordan. Don't worry about some city on a piece of dirt. Don't worry about that temple. Don't you remember when I said I'd tear this temple down and I'll rebuild it in 3 days? I was replacing it with myself. Don't worry about those things. Worry rather about your citizenship in heaven. Worry rather about whether the Father welcomes you in. And if you want to come to the Father, then you come through me. I read it, wrote it in my pastor's pen this morning, that there are two elements to that in a sense, isn't there? Maybe more. where if we want to know what God is like, then we get to look at Jesus. And so he defines what it means when we use that word God. If we were confused before, we just come back to the Gospels. What is Jesus like? Because God is like Jesus. Jesus is like God because they are. But it's also that through Jesus, he says, you belong to the kingdom. No one else gets the ability to judge that. No one else gets to call anyone into the kingdom but Jesus. And we may assume that we know who's going in and who's not going in, but that's not our place. Jesus makes that call. But when we're worried about where are we supposed to be, what is our place in this world, our first thought is, what is my position with the Father through Jesus? That's the core question. It's not where your feet are here and now. It's where your heart is, where your spirit rests. If you're still stuck trying to find your way in the world, maybe you need to ask, how can I find my way in God's kingdom? Maybe I need to ask, Lord, where do I belong with you? Maybe we get stuck in this world because we don't really belong here. That our citizenship doesn't come from this place. Maybe that's why we get stuck. We're still working too hard, like Thomas, to take a city, to reform a religion. And then dear old Philip, I do relate to this guy. Philip said to him, Lord, show us the Father, and it is enough for us. Oh, Philip. That sounds sweet, doesn't it? I mean, it reminded me of Moses. Just show me your face. God, I just want to see your face. That will be enough for me. Right? Like Philip's kind of going, "Ki-hi-hi-hi." Lord, it is enough for me to have a spiritual place, a spiritual gift, Lord. Just show me your Father and all will be well. It sounds right, doesn't it? All I am content with is to rest in your love, Lord. Have I been with you so long that you still do not know me, Philip? Yes, Lord. Whoever has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? The words that I say to you, I do not speak on my own authority, but the Father who dwells in me does his works. Important word. Believe me that I am in the Father and the Father is in me, or else believe on account of the works themselves. Truly, truly I say to you, whoever believes in me will also do the works that I do. And greater works than these will they do, because I am going to the Father. Whoever asks in my name, this I will do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If you ask me anything in my name, I will do it. Now what Philip was after isn't wrong, it's just he hasn't caught up. He's still stuck thinking that this is the day when you can't see the face of God. But you can when he's in the flesh in front of you. Oh, it looks like you, does he, God? Oh, I didn't expect that. God and Jesus, you look the same. I'm looking at the face of God, the Father. All right, okay. That's a bit of a shift. Anyone still stuck there? Anyone still stuck thinking that God cannot manifest as a person? Like, really? Still thinks that God was just like play acting with Jesus? Like a puppet at a distance? Looks a little bit like me, but not really me. Philip was stuck in his old history of Moses, the great Moses, just show me your face. And that's commendable, totally commendable for Moses in his time, in his day. What is wrong here, though, and which Jesus corrects, is that there's a real temptation to to go too far the wrong way. Jesus is saying initially, right, kingdom of heaven, right? That's your place. You're no longer a citizen of the earth. Your citizenship, your place of belonging is with the Father in heaven. You are a citizen of heaven. And then we overcorrect and say, oh, well, then forget about this world. I'll just hang out with God and the Spirit until I die. And Jesus, no, don't be so lazy. What have I been doing? I have been showing you the Father, and he's pretty active, don't you think? Like, if I've been only doing what the Father does and only saying what the Father says, this book ends with, and look, this is just a little bit of what Jesus did. I could have filled a whole library of, not all the libraries on the earth could have captured all the things that Jesus did because he was so busy, because God is always at work. Philip overcorrects in a lovely way, saying, I just want to have a lovely experience with the Father. And Jesus says, well, if you do, then you'll have to get active because he's always moving and you're stuck. You're stuck. You just wanted a spiritual experience. Will you not do the works I'm going to do? Don't you believe on the works that I've done? And if you believe in me, and if you are really, truly wanting to align yourself with the Father and citizen of heaven, you will do even greater things than I have done. Don't get stuck on a spiritual high. Get busy with the Father. If you love me, Jesus says, you will keep my commandments. And I will ask the Father, and he will give you another helper to be with you forever, even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive because it neither sees him nor knows him. You know him, for he dwells with you and will be in you. I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you yet a little while, and the world will see me no more. But you will see me. Because I live, you also will live. In that day you will know that I am in the Father, and you are in me, and I in you. Whoever has my commandments and keeps them is they who love me. And those who love me will be loved by my Father, and I will love them and manifest myself to them. Good speech from Jesus. Judas, not Iscariot, clearly says in the scriptures, in parentheses, just so we're not confused because he's already left. But the other Judas said to him, Lord, how is it that you will manifest yourself to us and not to the world? What's his query? These questions aren't actually that easy to understand or unpack, are they? When you really think, what's your problem, Judas? Like, why does that concern you? Well, maybe he's stuck too. Maybe he's also still looking for a king on a throne. One that will demonstrate to the world the sovereign rule of God, so that all the nations will come to Israel and receive gifts and wisdom. Still stuck in this idea of a national identity that at its very best was always going to be something that blessed the earth, wasn't it? It wasn't supposed to be Israel for Israel's sake, and they really got stuck on that problem. It was supposed to be Israel for the world's sake. Jesus is defining that for the world's sake in himself, not in the nation, because the nation's a bit of a mess. But he is the fulfillment of that promise. And Jesus isn't thinking, there's a wonderful retelling of some of these prophecies by Paul. He talks about not that people will come to Zion, but that Zion will spread its gifts out. So Paul knows what's going on and redefines things. But Judas is still thinking, but if you're gone, who do we show the world? Like, it's not us who need to see you anymore. It's the world, isn't it? I mean, we've obviously got this sussed. It's pretty evident that these disciples are very clued up. We don't need to. Why not the world? And what's Jesus' response? If anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him and will come to him and make our home with him. Whoever does not love me does not keep my words, and the word that you hear is not mine, but the fathers who sent me. These things I have spoken to you while I am still with you, but the Helper, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you all things and bring to your remembrance all that I have said to you. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. You heard me say, I am going away and I will come to you. If you loved me, you would have rejoiced because I am going to the Father, for the Father is greater than I am. And now I have told you before it takes place, so that when it does take place, you may believe. I will no longer talk much with you, for the ruler of the world is coming. Taking what Jesus had said before and what he says next, his response to Judas is incredibly profound. Judas, haven't you heard what I've been saying? Haven't you been hearing what I've been saying? No, I, Jesus, the first century Jew, will not be on this planet. But I, the Christ, will manifest myself to the world through you. I am not going away so that the world no longer knows what God looks like, what his true character is like. I'm going away so that you can enter into this relationship through the gift of the Spirit. So that when people ask, what is God really like? They can look at this Christian movement and somehow get a sense of what God is really like. Judas, I could stay here forever and you would stay stuck as just a small-minded, little ambitions kind of guy. I don't want that for you. When you are one of the Father's children, you need to grow up. And I am going to help you grow up. How? I'm going to give you my Spirit. And this Spirit will help you. This Spirit will teach you. This Spirit will empower you. This Spirit will bring to your mind everything that I've said. So that when the world looks at you, it will know that what I look like. Because you are manifesting, you are showing, embodying, incarnating Christ to the world. You know what? We do that best, not on our own, but absolutely as a group. Jesus almost never ministered alone. He always had people with him. And remember he says, this is again very much like Joshua. He says, go into this promised land, and if you keep to my law, I will be with you, and you will conquer. Jesus says something very similar. If you keep my commandments, I will live with you. My Father will dwell in you. We will make our home with you. We will be with you to the end. And what was the commandment? What commandment comes to mind, having since we've just read chapter 13? What was his great commandment as he closed that chapter off? That you will love one another. That you will love one another. How will the world know what God looks like? He said it. The world would know that you are my disciples by your love for one another. That is how we best demonstrate what God is like to the world. Because the world, as much as people love to use the word peace, it's mostly meaningless unless it's defined by Christ and the cross. Good luck to our nation and to our government at trying to find the cure to racism or the cure to religious tensions. Good luck. Because without Christ, you're going to need it and it won't work. We do not have the cure unless it's Jesus Christ. That is what it means as well by I am the way, the truth and the life. And if you are going to follow that way, you will love one another because I commanded it. And that's the only way we'll find peace. Which is why it won't happen outside the church. We should pray for it. And we should do what we can to invest in it. But it won't happen outside the church because unless we have the power of the Spirit, there's no way we can love one another. because I don't know about you, but I'm pretty strange. And I'm hard to love, and you're going to need a lot of strength. More than you've got. You're going to need the Spirit. So where are you stuck, as I conclude? Where are you stuck? Are you stuck spiritually? You're perhaps doing something else, hoping for something else, charging down one particular direction in your faith life with God, with a certain expectation of what God is supposed to do for you, and it's just not working, and you're stuck. What would the Lord say to you right now about your relationship with Him? Maybe the Lord has already been saying something to you. Are you stuck relationally? There's something, a relationship that you wish could move forward, that is broken, that is too tense, are you stuck? You can bring that to Jesus. And ask, Lord, how am I thinking about this? It's just not working. Am I a bumblebee banging my head against the window frame when I could just move across here and things would ease up and I'd go out? Or have I grabbed hold of the nuts like a monkey trying to get everything and I just can't get my hand out of the jar and I just need to let some things go and then I'd find peace? Or am I stuck in a spider's web and there's something quite dangerous here and I actually need you to rescue me from this? I'm stuck. I've got to stop struggling and trying to get out from my own strength but invite you in and help me out here, Lord. How are you stuck? Because when I read this passage, I was reflecting on it as I do for weeks, and I was drifting off to sleep one night, and this thought came to me. Do you want the promised land, or do you want to live in a land of promise? Do you want the promised land where you know where you live, where you are settled in a house, where you have a vineyard or a business or whatever, and you've got your life together in the promised land, the land flowing with milk and honey like New Zealand really is? Or do you come to the end of that and find it's still not satisfying enough? What you still need, what you really need is to live in a land of promise where anything could happen, where no matter how stuck you feel right now, there is a solution. Where the Father might have an idea that you didn't think of. Or where the Lord is thinking, yeah, you feel stuck now, but trust me, give it some time. I'm working on this. And while you feel stuck, let me impart some peace, because I don't want you to feel like there's no future here. With me, there's always a future. There's always a hope. There's always movement. Do you want to live in the promised land? Fill your house with stuff. Have a good career, be a respectable business person, be the A student. Is that your goal? Because that will end flat. Maybe you want to live in a land of promise. And the people said,
amen.
Or, what did he just say? Any reflections? We've got a couple of minutes if anyone wanted to share something. Yeah, they are good questions. They do get to the root of particular issues. And of course, that's why they're there, right? Jesus says a statement and then people respond, and it's the interaction, the back and forth, the nuancing that we benefit from. His language, though, can be quite circular, if you've noticed. I'm in you and you are in me and we're in the Father and we're going to be at home together and I'm going to a place that's like, well, let's just slow down, make it clearer. But it's all in there. Back of my eyelids. What was I studying? Oh, There's a couple of commentaries that I've been reading, but most of this is just my own reflections, to be honest. Yeah. So if it doesn't swing right, just... yeah. You can get lots of good things from commentaries, but they tend to be quite... They're not the thing you want to give as a sermon. So you still got to ask the Lord, what does he want to say in this context? And I'd probably say something different to another church. Anyone else? No? All right. It's right. I mean, if you wonder what was Jesus really like, just as you say, imagine how long-suffering he must have been, how he was about to go to a cross. I mean, I would be, if I had been given a death sentence, knew where I was going, I would have been frozen up, consumed in fear and grief. And Jesus is sitting there at a table going, right, okay, so that's your concern. Have I not been with you long enough, Philip? We are the same, and his long-sufferingness is the same with us too. Yeah, yeah, yep. I've spoken a bit, I think, this year about worldviews, the way that we think, the framing of the way we see the world, and how different cultures see it differently, and how different people see it differently within the same culture. And Jesus is constantly tackling those issues. You've got a particular worldview, and that is shaping all your responses and all your expectations, and so you see only what you expect to see, unless I do something that offends, or something that inspires, or does, or something that doesn't fit, and then you need to start to reshape your worldview. And this is all of that as well. And we've got them, we've got our own, you know, what does it mean that we will do greater things in him, aren't we? We're all a bit stuck in some ways. But he is good to us. Mai ho akwe e manaaki. Mana koe e tiaki. Mai hoa e mea ki a tia hotonam ta ki a koe. Mana hoke koe e atawhai. Mai hoa tono ka nohi e whakara ki a koe. Mana anō e tuku taranga marie ki a koe. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May he lift his countenance upon you and bring you peace. Amen. Thank you for coming. Wouldn't have been the same without you. Please stay for tea and coffee and for fellowship.